Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, more people are working from home than ever before. Students have transitioned to remote learning. Zoom conferences are the new normal. With that in mind, today on the program, we will help you solve your computer and technology troubles. Tony Yang is the operator of Albany-based Gig Computers, currently managing the computer network here at WAMC. Also with us, Mark Bogosian, owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. So if you have a tech question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Tony, Mark, your computer call's coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's computers and technology today. And here to answer your questions, Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. Mark is the owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham, New York. With 35 years of experience, Mark offers a range of Macintosh service and tech support. Tony Yang started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany, now one of the largest PC real... Let's try it again. Oh boy, I'm on lockdown. My brain has been on lockdown for some time now. It is now one of the largest PC retailers in the region. That's what it says. Tony manages networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one. It's great to have these two back on the air. The number to call if you have a question, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us also at voxpop@wamc.org. Tony Yang, Mark Bogosian, welcome back, gentlemen.
Thanks, Ray.
Hey, Ray.
Great to have you guys here.
Great to be here. I hope you and Tony are doing well.
Well, I don't know. Let's find out. Tony, how are you doing?
All right, pretty good. Being indoors for this long is driving me a little crazy. Other than that, we're staying safe and staying in house for as much as we can to hopefully get through this soon.
You know, as this has unfolded, we rapidly hit a brave new world where a huge population is now working from home. There have been bandwidth issues I've been hearing about. Haven't really had any at our house, even though we have a lot of computers running all the time. Tony, what sort of questions are you getting now to have to deal with from afar?
Yeah, so, you know, because we serve mostly corporate clients, we had to scramble around to get basically all of our clients, employees up and running remotely to their offices. So that's been challenging to say the least, because they all want to get ready for remote access and remote telework the next day. It took us a few days to get most people up and running, but we finally did. And as far as the retail commercial side is concerned, I've noticed that at my house, when I watch Netflix, there are a couple of shows that started buffering where it never used to have that type of problem. I just want folks out there to know that right now, you know, you have many times the regular number of users on these various networks out there. So you're going to see these issues, and they're not necessarily because of your internet service provider. Mm. They may not be able to do anything for you because it's actually the places like Netflix or Yahoo or Amazon Video that are just, you know, having very, very heavy loads of usage, and they can only accommodate so many people simultaneously. So if you have those issues right now at this point, not necessarily a problem with your ISP.
Mm. And so what you're trying to say by saying you're watching a lot of Netflix, you've been watching Tiger King, right, Tony?
I watched the entire, you know, funny enough, I was, I'm never on Netflix. My kids love it.
Yeah.
But I bench watch a show called Lucifer. I don't know if anybody has ever watched it.
I don't know. I used to work here, though. I know that. Yeah.
So I mean, 4 or 5 seasons in like a few nights. had a massive headache afterwards, and I will never do that again.
All right. Hey, well, Mark, you know, one question I had about wireless modems, and I'll throw this one to you. I'm sure either one of you guys can answer this. But if I were to take it's a long story involving one of my – right before the lockdown, one of my children threw a Wii remote through my TV. So I had to buy a new one, and it's a smart TV. And so it's connected now to Wi-Fi. But – it's near my modem. All I need to do is get about a 6-foot-long Cat 5 cable. Will that improve the Wi-Fi signal? In other words, the Wi-Fi usage throughout the house if I have that one hardwired, or is it all the same pipe?
Well, actually, you know, to be truthful, I think Tony is probably the best one to answer this as a network specialist.
All right. Well, fear not, Mark, because I have a great – a Mac question for you in a moment. But go ahead, Tony. Answer that one for me.
I know my strengths and weaknesses.
I tend to think, especially right now, you know, if you live in a house, things don't matter as much. But if you are in a in an apartment, for example, with many other people, you're always better off using a wire.
Okay.
This is why we always have, you know, any type of workstation at a company's or even, you know, a house's hardwire as much as we can.
Okay.
It's always the better way to go.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Computers and Technology Today with Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. And let's grab a call or two before the first break. We also have a nice email here that I will get to. Sarah in Pittsfield. Sarah, you're on.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I love your show.
Thanks.
I have a question about some apps that are in my phone that I have no idea how they got there. And when I go to the application manager, I am unable to access them to delete them. So I have tried to work with them, close them. A couple of them don't close. I empty the cache and they pop back up. Or sometimes when I'm able to close the apps, then they have their permissions reopen. And they have permissions to my phone and SMS. And it's very strange. And some of them have some very strange names. And I just noticed this one day because I was trying to actually download an app and legitimately, and I noticed all these weird apps in my application manager. And they seem to be overlays or cover-ups for something else. And I am having a hard time accessing them. I reboot my phone and they come back. And they're always there. They seem to be belong to something else that I can't access.
Okay.
I know it sounds strange.
No, it sounds good. I think you've stunned both of our guests. Who wants to answer that one?
Well, it sounds like it's an Android phone, correct?
It is, yes.
Tony.
Tony. Oh, wait a minute, Mark. Why do you assume that it's an Android phone?
But it is.
Mostly because she can't figure it out.
Ouch. Oh.
Oh,
see, now that's
boy,
Apple
boy.
Elitism. We don't need that. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tony.
Mark, we're not in the same room today. hey, Sarah. You know, I think maybe two things for you to consider here. To uninstall an app, it's somewhat similar to the Apple platform. I mean, you can simply drag that icon and kind of flip it onto the top, and that would start the uninstall process. There are some applications that are built into phones that you may not recognize, and they will pop up when there are updates and things like that coming from the manufacturer. So you may be experiencing that where it's actually a built-in part of the core OS. And every phone manufacturer has a different set of applications. They are not the same from vendor to vendor. So Samsung, for example, which is a very, very popular phone out there, they have probably, I don't know, I mean, dozens of different applications, small to some of the bigger apps that are built into it. So even if you uninstall it and you do a a Android update, it will put those applications back because they come with the Samsung phone as a default. So that might be some of the reasons why, you know, that might be the reason why you're getting some of these back, even though you have uninstalled it. Now, so that's the first part. The second part is, if you are noticing just a consistent bunch of things that you don't recognize and they're popping up out of nowhere, the thing to do maybe at this point is to reset your phone back to default, because it's possible that you might have a bug in there or some type of virus in there that could be causing this kind of irregular activities. You can simply reset your phone back to manufacturer defaults. Of course, back up your data before, you know, save all of your data before you do that. But once you have saved all your data, reset the phone to manufacturer defaults and then put the data back and see if that solves your problem. That usually it does. That's kind of the last resort, but it always solves these unusual issues on a phone.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Tony Yang is here, Mark Bogosian as well. We answer your computer and tech questions today on Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We talk computers and tech today with Mark Bogosian of Castle Mac Service in Latham and Tony Yang of Gig Computers. And okay, Mark, you've been getting an easy ride of it so far. So here are a couple Mac questions that came in via email. And the first one is from Larry. Why is a contact that works perfectly on my iPhone X unrecognized by my synced MacBook and iPad? All of my other contacts work fine. How do I set it up to get this contact to work synchronously on all three of my devices? And that's from Larry.
Well, it sounds like something Tony would ask, but that said, it's most likely because you're using, without realizing it, two different contact or address books. Quite frequently, we have the address book that's synced with our Apple Cloud or even by itself on the phone, and another address book that may look similar, have many of the same addresses, but is not synced or is its own library, its own contact list. So it's most likely because the two are not actually synced, although they may appear to be. You'd want to go into the preferences on the phone and make sure that it is synced with the cloud through your iCloud account, and likewise do the same on the computer and make sure that the address book specifically is synced with the cloud.
Okay.
And then within there, there's often groups and things like that. So sometimes we're looking at what appears to be the same exact address book, but is really behind the scenes a different file. So that sounds like what's happening there.
This one's from Bob in Albany. I recently upgraded my iMac operating system to Catalina. And not surprisingly, the iMac is a lot slower. It's a 2013 with 8 gigabytes of memory and 3.2 gigahertz quad-core Intel processor. Would adding memory make it faster? Can memory be added? And that's from Bob in Albany.
And it was a 21-inch? I'm sorry.
It's an iMac. It just says iMac operating on Catalina.
Okay.
So they named their operating systems after salad dressings, apparently. So that's
Yeah, they went from large cats to salad dressing.
All right, fine.
So the as far as memory goes, you cannot easily add RAM to a 21-inch iMac, but you can add RAM very easily to a 27-inch iMac, and it's the way they're constructed.
Okay.
That said, this is quite common when we upgrade to the latest Catalina, also known as Operating System 10.15.
Uh-huh.
What frequently happens is, because of remnants from older operating systems, really just being in the wrong place at the wrong time, we find that there's conflicts with preferences, older application preferences, library files, things like that. So often, and Catalina uses a totally different disk filing system. So often the transition from an older operating system, even if it's not very old, to a new, this brand new one, Catalina, because of the way it looks at the drives, does produce some slowness.
Yeah.
The more practical or the more direct way to solve the problem, although it's a little laborious, is to back up, wipe out the drive, and reinstall from scratch Catalina, and then restore the data. In some cases, we'll even revert back to a slightly older operating system, but that also requires to back up, redo the drive, and reinstall. So it's probably nothing you did wrong, but rather just being in the wrong place the wrong time with some of the older system files that just don't get replaced or jibe well with the newer system files.
All right, fair enough. Now, we have a stack of emails here, but we also have a full bank of calls. So let's go back to the calls. I'll try to intersperse some emails as we go along here. Lissa in Kingston has been waiting quite a while. You're up.
Great. Thanks, Ray. I recently have been doing, as everyone has, doing a lot of Zoom calls. And a friend said to me that she won't use Zoom because she's heard that it's easily hackable. And I just wanted to know what the professionals thought.
Well, that's been all over the news. So let's go to Tony on this one.
Yes. So Zoom was never... It was never really a kind of a high enterprise level system when it comes to, you know, to secure video conferencing. They were really more of a consumer product in the beginning, and then it got adapted into corporate use. So I think they are lagging behind when it comes to security, although there has been a lot of work lately to try to secure their network. I think that this type of unprecedented usage, you know, you heard about the UK government using Zoom for their conferences, which I thought was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But there's been such a wide adaptation to use Zoom that they didn't, you know, they really weren't prepared for all of these, I think, security holes out there. So they're patching it. I would say that for basic usage, you're fine. You know, if you're video conferencing with your family out on the other side of the country, that's fine. I probably wouldn't use it if I'm a government agency, at least for now. Alternatives like Skype, which is owned by Microsoft
right
now, is
right
a better alternative. But I think in general, you know, they have security issues, but it's not to the point where you have to be afraid to use it for day-to-day use. I mean, higher secure stuff, I get it. But day-to-day, I wouldn't worry about it too much. I use it almost on a daily basis for my corporate calls and talking to clients and my different groups I belong to. We all use Zoom. And I have personally, got to tell you, no concerns. I think my biggest concern so far from Zoom has been that some of the calls, as many of you have heard, were overloaded to one of their data centers in China. That seems to be the most scary thing for me, but it turns out that that they made a mistake and that stopped now.
Ah.
So other than that, I mean, I really haven't seen anything that would triggered a big red flag in my head, in my mind at the moment.
All right, listen, thanks a lot for the call. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to add, you know, on a practical basis, from what we understand, the hacks, as they were, would be somewhat obvious. You'd see somebody appearing on your screen, or somebody might be listening in or something like that. Not that our personal lives should be open to everybody, but it's not as if they'll get into your computer and watch you while you sleep. You know, you do have some control. You can cover up your camera lens on the computer, which is one of the most simplest, you know, one of the simpler, most practical things you can do to protect your privacy. So I agree with Tony that many of the things we're seeing they'll be obvious, and they're not deep security issues where, again, they'll be getting into your bank record while you're talking to Aunt Sally in Ohio.
Right. Okay. Very good. Let's go to Peter in Albany. Peter, you're on.
Yes.
Hi.
I'm kind of old tech, and I'm also my...
Peter,
I need to replace.
We got a bad cell phone connection. Hello? There. Can you try moving around a little bit and stating your question again?
Is that a little better?
Not splendidly so, but give it a shot.
How's that?
All right, that's good.
Okay. So I have an old iPhone 6. I need to replace it. I'm just wondering for a few things that I may want to wait till stores open again, because I'm not real high tech and I want to be able to get support. Considering an 8, a 10R, and an 11 right now. So my questions about waiting are whether I should wait to open so I can get good support, being not too technical.
Gotcha.
And also whether I should be waiting on the phones that are supposedly, these are not 5G compatible. Should we be waiting for a phone that comes out by Apple that's 5G compatible?
All right, Mark, I think you got the gist of that, right?
Well, yeah, I think so. So as far as waiting for new technology, I've last 35 years, I've always cautioned people to put that in the right focus, the right perspective, because whenever you buy something, I guarantee within 6 months there'll be another newer version of what you bought for the same or less money and more features and capabilities. So you'll always be chasing your tail in that respect. I think the better thing to do is when you feel you are ready to make the investment, get rid of the old phone, whatever the factors may be, then look at what technology is available at that time and don't worry about what's coming down the pike in 2 or 3 or 6 months. The other side of that coin is you don't want to be the beta tester. You don't want to be the guinea pig for the newest, latest, greatest, whether it's a phone or any other technology. We've seen dozens and dozens of cases of this where, you know, brand new exciting technology comes out and there are bug fixes that go on for 6 months.
Right.
And as far as which phone, I'm really not in a position to say, well, this one has these features and this one is better for that. As far as tech support, I think once you get the phone and you get used to some of the features, which many of which can be covered over the phone with an Apple technician, you won't have ongoing support needs that's going to last for weeks and weeks and months and months. So I would toss a coin and make the decision more based on when you're ready to get rid of the old one and spend the money. I don't see that, being able to walk into a store is going to amplify your level of use or understanding that much more than just making a phone call to Apple's tech support banks.
Peter, thank you for the call. It's Computers and Tech Today. Tony Yang and Mark Boghossian here to answer your questions. And this email from Joel: being recently forced to transition from Windows 7 to Windows 10, we find that the Windows 10 email does not support contact groups formation. Does a remedy workaround exist for this? And that's from Joel. Tony.
So, Joe, I'm assuming that you're using the built-in Microsoft Mail program, which is not really the best software to use. Consider getting Microsoft Outlook, which gives you many, many other options when it comes to setting up groups in your contacts, in your email inbox, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So that'll be a worthwhile investment to get a copy of Outlook. You can get them for probably a few dollars a month and use that. That's the better way to go.
All right, fair enough. Back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's go to wrong, Raymond. I'm sorry, Zach, the engineer. Let's go to Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Hi. I hope I can articulate this question well enough, because I'm kind of a Luddite in every way.
Go ahead. You'll be fine.
I was using Word, and my internet went out, and I live in Plainfield, and we have Verizon, and it's terrible, and we were just about to get the new municipally owned Plainfield broadband, and then the pandemic hit, and we have to wait to get it installed.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was using Word, and the internet cut out, and now Word is just weird. When I open a document I've already saved, or if I try to start a new document, it's like way up in the corner of the screen where I can't like maximize or minimize it. And then it seems to want to stay there. Even when I close the document, there's this, like, window that shows Word. And I've restarted and turned off and several times, and I'm wondering if I can get it to look the way it used to and show up in the middle of the screen where I can access all the menus at the top, and I don't know what's wrong.
Uh-oh. Tony.
Emily, I'm using I'm thinking, are you on Office 365?
Oh, I probably have I don't know which office I had. I got this computer several years ago. It was built for me by a good place in Northampton. So you're asking which version of Office am I on?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you got a few years ago, then it's probably not Office 365. So the reason I'm asking that is, and this could be helpful with other listeners out there, Office 365 is heavily internet dependent. So when you don't have an internet connection, things can look and feel and work a little differently than normal. So if you're not using Office 365, then it's probably something outside of that that's happening. Office applications are meant to kind of save it, when you first open it up, it always comes back as a default setting, meaning the window should have opened up in its normal position and screen size, even though the last time you had it open, it might just be a quarter of your screen. So you got something else different going on in your computer. I would go and see if you have a restore point on your computer.
Restore point. Okay, so Tony, show.
Where would I look for it?
Show Emily quickly how you can find the restore point.
Okay, so the restore point would be inside your control panel under systems.
Have a control panel. I guess I do. I have like this menu that shows up if you hit the Windows icon at the bottom corner of the.
That's right.
Screen.
Yep, and that's fine. You just type in control panel or type in system. And click on that. That should pop up a menu that takes you to the advanced functions, and then that's where the restore point is. You know, the computers typically will have a restore point that is saved when you last made a change to your system, and that's going to allow you to get back the old settings that you had before your last change. And I'm thinking something changed in your computer, and if you can get back to the restore point, that will get you back over to the to your last setting. The other option that you have, Emily, is uninstall Office /Word, and then reinstall it. That will clear out your settings. It won't delete any of your data, but it will clear the program and the settings and then put back the default settings. So that's another route to go.
Does that make sense, Emily?
Enough so that I could ask someone who is good at this to help me, and we could take it from there. So, yeah, I think that'll get me going.
Cool.
And I found the system part here. So, yes, I think you headed me in the right direction, and I will give it a shot. Thank you for your help.
I got to say, I have high faith in you, Emily. Now, why don't you call us back next time these guys are on and let us know if I was right. All right.
I'm embarrassed too, but maybe. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. Hey, tell you what, Zach. Let's take a break. And it's the computer show today. Mark Bogosian is here. Tony Yang is here. Many, many more calls and emails and such coming up. Jeff Beck for you here on the Vox Pop program. Just a word about our engineer. Zach Malloy is the long-suffering engineer on this program. And, you know, since the lockdown, we've had no guests in the studio. So all of our engineers have been dealing with phone guests and innumerable other issues that have made their lives miserable. Now, Zach generally is the cranky sort anyway. but he's really held up pretty well. And so we applaud our engineers here. The number to call is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here, gentlemen, and then we'll get back to the phones. All right, this one, okay, there's a lot of technical information. Tell you what, Tony and Mark, if you have a question about this person's operating system, ask me. I'm not going to go into the whole thing. Fran writes, last year, starting up, got the BIOS message, no boot media present. Swapped the RAM, moved all the SATA cables around, kicked it a couple of times, nothing. Don't know if it's the Asus Gene MB or the solid-state drive that is faulty. I have lots of drone video on the hard drives. Any way to recover this data, and if so, the best way? And again, if you need the technical information on Fran's operating system and computer, I have it here.
That sounds like a Tony computer.
Okay.
There.
Okay. All right. So you're out of here. All right,
watch him, Mark.
Yeah.
Anytime the word BIOS is used, we know where that goes.
All right. Well, this seems like a tough question, but I think you can hack this, Tony. So go ahead.
Yep. Okay. So whenever it says boot media not available, It generally means that the system, the computer system itself, cannot find a hard drive that it can read and boot into Windows.
So the order got switched, perhaps, or one of the hard drives is now toast?
Yeah. So if this happens all of a sudden out of nowhere, it typically will mean that the hard drive somehow has failed. Now, there are different degrees of hard drive failing. You simply may have just the boot sector of the hard drive that got modified by something, and now it's not allowing the BIOS to read it properly, and that's why it's not booting up. Now, that doesn't translate to the same as losing all the data. The data could still be there that you've saved all of these years. It's just the boot sector isn't running properly. So there are different degrees of failure, but certainly there is some type of a failure on here. I would say that if you have tried to reset the BIOS and boot it up again, it should by default boot into the C drive,
it's a solid state drive for the operating system, and then all the data is on two terabyte hard drives.
Yeah. Oh, so in that case, what the user might want to do, and it sounds like they've done it, go into the BIOS and make sure that you're setting the boot drive as that SSD drive that holds your Windows operating system.
Right.
That'll be number one. And if that fails, then that means there's something going on with the boot sector itself, the SATA drive itself. What you want to do in that case is do a Windows repair. If you got a CD, do a Windows repair. I suspect that the data is still there. The SSD drives don't fail that easily. The bad thing on that about SSD drives is once it fails, it's very, very expensive and difficult to recover.
Right.
That's the one thing I think a lot of users don't realize is the old mechanical drives, you can recover the data on it unless the platter is completely destroyed. An SSD drive, because it doesn't really have a platter on there, once a SSD drive fails, it's a lot more work to get it recovered, if not virtually impossible. So always have backups, and backups.
Now, it doesn't say what the hard drives for the data, the 2 terabyte hard drives are, but it's an RAID 0 array, whatever that exactly is. But assuming it's the operating system only on that solid-state drive, that data, all the stuff on the hard drive should be okay, right?
Yes. So if the data is saved to the other drives on a RAID 0 system, you should be fine.
Okay.
The data is still going to be there. In fact, there is RAID 0 is basically a strike set, meaning you're combining two drives to use it as one.
Right.
Now, on a RAID 0, this gets to be technical now.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Go ahead.
Yeah. So on a RAID, the RAID systems are basically redundant drive systems, allows you to combine multiple drives and use it as one. It gives you speed advantages, higher capacity advantages,
right,
redundancy advantages. RAID 0 is basically two drives as one, and it's the BIOS that makes that RAID zero.
All right, final question here, and then we got to move on. Could it have been that the BIOS, there was an automatic update done to the BIOS, and in fact it defaulted back to looking for a C drive and not an SSD operating system?
Yes, this is why it's important to make sure you go in there and select the SSD as the boot drive.
Okay. Let's go to another email and then back to the phones. I wish we had a couple of hours with you guys. This is from Karen. Karen says, now that my kids are distance learning at home, we're using some of the older computers more regularly. My 2015 iMac that runs slowly. Can you recommend a program I can run to clean it up? Any other recommendations for speeding up older machines? And that's from Karen.
Well, Karen, it's not necessarily a cleanup issue, or there's not necessarily an application that'll go in and clean it up. It could be anything from malware and viruses to corrupt files to old application software. So there's really no product that I would recommend or endorse to say, like there used to be in the old days, that can defragment a hard drive or do those types of operations. So the cleanup would really be more of a manual examination of the drive, making sure that your software is up to date, make sure your operating system is somewhat up to date, maybe look at an antivirus program, to make sure there's nothing running in the background. So those are the types of things that you'd want to look at, rather than, you know, trying to purchase or find a free download of a cleaning program. Many of those cleaning programs cause more problems than they solve, unfortunately.
Mark Bogosian is here from Castle Mac Service in Latham. Tony Yang from Gig Computers, and our number is 800-348-2551. Susie in Northampton. Susie, you're on.
Oh, wow. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right. This is wonderful. I just got a computer, and I'm using the Wi-Fi from the library because I live right next to the library.
Good for you.
It connects just fine, but then Xfinity shoves me off and interrupts the connection. What can I do?
It connects.
I clearly want to, you know, have business.
So you're swiping Wi-Fi from the library, and how can you keep doing that? Is that the bottom line here?
It's totally legal.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm not making a value judgment here. All right, guys, how can she fix that?
Does it disconnect immediately or after 20 minutes or certain times of the day?
No. It disconnects right away, and they also bring up their sheet, you know, on my laptop, their website on my laptop. I mean, they're clearly, I've heard this from other friends of mine too, and I'm just wondering, it feels like that's illegal, and I'm wondering, who can I call about it?
Well, you probably start with the library, but I know, for instance, when you go to a hotel and you try to connect to their free Wi-Fi, it'll appear like it's putting something on your screen, but it's really bringing up a browser window that's built into that Wi-Fi connection to say, you know, put in your authorization code or your room number or your last name, whatever the case may be. So they're not really intruding on your system, but rather bringing up a most likely a browser page of some sort. It almost sounds like
I'm sorry.
Right. Well, it sounds like you need to log into something on their end. I would be a little surprised if any kind of, you know, organization, even the library, would leave a free Wi-Fi open like that without some type of authentication or some type of password or security barrier.
I live right next to the library.
Right.
I mean, possible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would contact the library then, because and even though you live right next door and so forth, again, it's unusual for an organization like that to have a Wi-Fi without some type of security, because somebody could log on to that and commit a crime of some sort, and the library could be liable or that type of thing. So it's very common that they have some type of layer of security.
Okay.
The disconnect sounds like that type of thing where you're being booted off because of lack of authentication of some sort.
Okay. If that doesn't happen, who would I call? Because I know friends of mine have had the same issue. Who could I call to report this?
Probably the owner of the Wi-Fi. In this case, yeah, the library itself. You know, if they're, they have control of the rights, that would make sense.
No, that really helps. I really appreciate it.
So,
thank you.
Susie, so basically a lot of people in Northampton are grabbing the Wi-Fi from the library? Is that the deal?
I don't know how far away you have to live. I mean, you know, I put my computer right up against the window.
Oh, good for you.
And I do have a library card, so it's possible somehow from my computer, though I can't imagine how, they know it's me.
I admire your ingenuity, and so continue. Susie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. I love this show. Edwin in Bronx. In the Bronx. Edwin, how you doing?
Oh, great. Hey, how are you?
Good.
I'm from the Bronx. I actually, I'm not a computer expert. I don't know much about computers, but I purchased a computer months ago, and you know, recently there was some sort of update or something like that. And ever since I clicked on that, every time the computer starts, it never goes into the you know, into the main screen. It just constantly reboots.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. I was just wondering if somebody can help me with that. And my other question is that I keep hearing a lot about something with the cloud. Is that something that is in the computer? What is that?
Two separate questions. Let's handle the hardware question first, and then you guys can quickly talk about the cloud.
So is it a Mac or a PC?
It's a PC.
Okay. Tony?
So if you're doing an update and it fails in the middle, you're at a point where it's going to be difficult to recover from that. Unfortunately, these upgrades, when they work, it's great. When it doesn't work, you're down to basically two choices. One is to roll it back. So, you know, if the upgrade process is giving you the option to roll it back, great, do that. Doesn't always work. We in fact find that to be unreliable. The other option would be to reinstall the Windows OS and start all over again. You're in a bad situation when it comes to a failure during an actual upgrade.
Mm.
So those are the two types of scenarios that you're under at this point.
Oh, boy.
As far as the cloud is concerned, you know, the cloud is really nothing more than just the internet. When people tell you they got their data up in the cloud, all it means is it's that data is sitting at a data center location somewhere on the computer. It's not magically in the internet somewhere. In multiple places. It is located in one location. So the cloud is nothing more than having your data stored remotely someplace out there.
All right, Edwin, good luck, and thank you for the call. We appreciate hearing from the Bronx. Lynn in Rosendale. Lynn, you're on.
Oh, yay. Hi, thank you so much.
Hi.
I'm also a Luddite. I have a Compaq with Windows 7, and I got the Microsoft Security Essentials notice, we're not going to cover you anymore.
Okay.
And then it went off so that I get a little red thing with an X through it. And I found that I am able to start it. If I start it, it turns green. And then at some point, it turns red again.
No.
And I don't know whether this is okay. I also have an old, very old version of 2016 of Malwarebytes, which is an anti-malware thing program, and is that the same as Microsoft Essentials?
Okay.
Do I need to download that, or I'm
okay.
not
okay?
Sure
I think
what
you got something going on with the lack of support after a while of Windows 7. Tony.
Yes. Yeah, so Windows 7 officially, Microsoft ended Windows 7 support on January 14th of this year. So what that means is they no longer will give you security patches for any any type of a security issue moving forward. Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot use your computer anymore. You can use it for as long as you want to. It's just if there are security issues on there, they will not provide any support moving forward.
Even if I punch that in and say run or something like that, don't rely on that. I'm talking about the icon.
Icon, right. No, we got you.
Yep. You can turn off the notification. The notification doesn't prevent you from using your computer. You can just go ahead and either ignore it.
I'm using my computer.
Okay.
And when I look at my icon now, it says PC status protected, and it's got a little check in it, and it's green color. The little it's like a castle.
Yeah. Windows Defender, right. Yeah, so basically, you're not going to get any system updates. In other words, oftentimes, right, Tony, there will be some sort of a patch. There'll be something they find, a security flaw, and then Microsoft will send you a patch. They do that, but they've stopped doing that as of January 14th for Windows 7. So if that thing is offline, you could run it theoretically forever, right, Tony?
Yes, you can even use it to go onto the internet. It's just not as safe as a fully updated Windows 10 machine. But you can use that for as long as you want. I mean, I got machines running Windows 98 still today, and it runs just fine.
I have a question. Will this malware? I would like it to be protected because nowadays it's more. I'm going to have to use the computer to do more purchases than I would normally. I normally don't do much.
Okay.
But now I might have to do more, and I'm nervous about that.
Right.
Malwarebytes is not the same as Microsoft Defender. They're two different things.
Right.
Right.
You know, I would say run both, and for your purpose, get the pay version of Malwarebytes. That will give you extra standby protection if you're going to continue using that Windows 7 machine.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Lynn. We are almost out of time here. Let me grab an email or two. This one is from Steve. I went through the usual steps to try to uninstall McAfee from my new Lenovo laptop. To no avail, it seems to never get to the last step. Any suggestions?
Usually it is because the version is either incompatible with the OS or that it's having trouble porting over some of the settings. So uninstall the original version and then reinstall the new version.
Okay.
That's probably the best step.
Finally, we have this email here from Greg. It says, hey, I was listening to your tech radio show. The radio host and the guest, Tony, made a comment about the new Mac OS Catalina being named after salad dressing. The new Mac OS is named after the Catalina Islands off of the coast of California. That's from Greg. Okay, well, if they come up with a rogue for it, I'm going to go back to my theory. Hey, listen, Tony and Mark, thank you guys for being here. Hopefully next time you'll be in the studio, and you guys did great. Support comes from Gardener Supply at Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. At the Hyde Collection, temporarily closed to support our community, but providing online art activities for families guided by educators, HydeCollection.org, and Facebook for details. Once again, thanks to Mark Bogosian of Castle Mac and Tony Yang of Gig Computers for being here today. Thank you for listening. Only kidding about the Mac operating systems being named after salad dressings. We know that's, well, we think that's not the case. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our long-suffering engineer. Thanks to Amber Sickles, who answered the phones. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we bring back a great. Ali B will be here to talk about Southern cooking. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.